Today's Greenhorn Radio is an archived episode concerning the 2012 Farm Bill. Enjoy.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
One of our Farm Bill Policy Podcast series. I'm here in the Hudson studio of WGXC with Annette Higby, and she's in Vermont. Hello, Annette.
Hi, Severin. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Would you mind explaining to our radio viewers, or radio listeners, I should say, what is the New England Farmers Union?
The New England Farmers Union is one of the youngest chapters of the National Farmers Union. The National Farmers Union is one of the largest general farm organizations in the United States. NFU was chartered in 2006. We're currently at about 1,500 members and growing. We have most of our members are farmers, and they include cranberry growers, fruit and vegetable farmers, dairy farmers, and they're conventional, they're sustainable, they're organic, beginning and established. So it's a really very diverse membership organization. We also count as our members a number of food co-ops in New England. So one of our affiliated members has 30 food co-ops in New England that in turn has about 90,000 consumer members. So we think that this combination of farmers and consumers are a really potent voice to bring about some real change in this farm bill cycle.
So it's all about change, and it's all about New England, and it's good that you're mentioning about working with the consumers, you know, because the Northeast is such a populous region, and as such, the farmers in this region face quite tremendous development pressure on the land that they farm, and yet are blessed with, you know, a huge market to serve. Could you define a little bit more in detail the particular voice, the particular flavor to the New England Farmers Union and the issues that you focus on being of this region?
Sure. NFU works primarily on federal farm policy. There are some exceptions. We do pay attention to state policy as it relates to cooperatives, because cooperative development is extremely important to us, and a lot of policies affecting cooperatives happen at the state level. That's where cooperatives are born, so to speak. That's the law that affects them. But for the most part, our focus is federal. So we focus on the federal farm bill. We focus on appropriations, agricultural appropriations, which happens every year. We also had a strong focus around the recent Food Safety Modernization Act legislation, and did what we could to ensure there were provisions within that bill that allowed alternative compliance measures for small and moderate-sized farmers. So NFU is really, I guess, in the farm organization spectrum, both the New England Farmers Union and the National Farmers Union really seek to support small and moderate-sized family farms. That's our that's our base, so to speak. Okay. We're also going to be the new federal farm bill reauthorization that's coming up in 2012. We plan to be totally engaged in that, and among our priorities are issues of local and regional food system development, organic agriculture, beginning farmers, including land tenure issues. We're also very concerned about maintaining a safety net for our small and mid-sized dairy farmers, because that's so central and key to keeping our landscape a working landscape. And we're also we'll also be focused on conservation programs within the federal farm bill, like the Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program that funds a lot of farmland conservation efforts.
Well, and this is the thing. In New England, we have these wonderful old barns. In all of America, we have wonderful old farmers and older farmers. And the issue of farmland transfer and moving forward a living landscape to the next set of hands, be it a lineal line, keeping it within a family, or moving land between farmers, between farming generations. Could you talk about some of the strategies that you've identified that are very, and I, this, one of the things I wanted to make sure everyone who was listening knew about was your policy platform and how tremendously practical your organization is and how thoroughly you think out what this policy points us towards. But can you talk a little bit about if we're pointing towards a living landscape and new farmers on the land and keeping the land in farming, what are some of the methods by which you see that happening?
Beginning farmers are a significant priority for us. And we're supporting something, a bill called the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Opportunity Act that was introduced by Congressman Walz from Minnesota and Senator Tom Harkin in the Senate. And it provides, there are a number of provisions within it that support beginning farmers. It includes increased authorization for Farm Service Agency lending. It includes renewed funding for a program called the Beginning Farmer Rancher Development Program that funds organizations that provide technical assistance to beginning farmers and has been really well utilized in New England by lots of groups who are helping farmers in the nitty-gritty of getting farmers in the profession of agriculture, providing technical assistance on everything from financial planning to business planning to how to maintain tractors to land tenure issues to lease reviews to the whole gamut of the services that beginning farmers need. It also includes a provision that we think is really important with respect to conservation projects, and it provides that for conservation projects that include or serve a beginning farmer or end up with a beginning farmer on the land or that use something called an option to purchase at agricultural use value or includes a transfer plan, that those kinds of projects that make it more likely to put a beginning farmer on the land, that those will have a priority. So we're supportive of that provision as well.
So obviously, so those of you who are not super familiar with farm programs, there's within the Farm Bill there are various titles, and conservation has been one of the titles that has suffered, unfortunately, in this in the draft that was created by the super committee, but which has been gaining ground in the past. And conservation programs, and if I'm wrong, Annette, I'm just a greenhorn when it comes to almost everything, but especially farm policy.
You're absolutely right. And conservation funding has taken hits not just in the opening salvo, I guess, of the Farm Bill, but for the last two appropriation cycles, the appropriators have taken funding significant cuts out of conservation funding. I'll just make a plug here for. I think our legislators, both on the Appropriations Committee and on the Ag Committees, really need to hear from us about how important conservation programs are. And it's not just land conservation programs. It's also programs like EQIP that have funded high tunnels. EQIP has also begun to play a really important role in helping farmers transition into organic agriculture or to support farmers who are already practicing organic agriculture. There are conservation programs that go well beyond the traditional farmland conservation efforts that are really important and important to New England, and we need to support their funding. And our delegation really needs to hear from us about how important those programs are.
So sometimes people, and I know this from conversations with the lay people that I call my family, they're saying, oh, conservation, that means, you know, habitat, or that means, you know, taking land out of production. And in fact, it can instead mean conservation kind of more broadly, i.e. the kind of the conservation of our natural resources and of our soils. And so friends of mine who gotten, you know, wonderful grants for hoop houses in order to be able to produce year-round greens, although not so much greens in December, it slows down a lot, but other parts times of the year. And then also fencing and incentives for cover cropping and building and maintaining, you know, the base of our agricultural productivity, which is the soil. So
right.
Getting familiar with NRCS and inspiring, you know, the part of it that is really jazzy to me is inspiring the NRCS people who are near you, you know, with your tremendous zeal and enthusiasm and ambition, to be a good soil steward and to make use of the programs that exist and the expertise that is still there. But if we don't fight for it, it could soon go away.
Those working lands conservation programs, as opposed to programs that take agricultural land out of production, a lot of them that, through NRCS, offer cost share for various practices structures. And in the current Farm Bill, and we're also hoping to continue it, there are more generous cost share rates offered for beginning farmers. So we're also hoping to continue that in the 2012 or the 2013 Farm Bill.
So if policy wasn't glamorous to you until now, just think about what it means to have Uncle Sam help you out when you're spending thousands of dollars putting up fencing so that the farm that was a dairy that turned into commodity corn that then went out or just was hayland for horses or for whatever, and you're trying to bring it back into grass-fed beef, and all that fencing and high tensile with those corner posts, that is conservation too. Anyway, so what are the challenges that we are facing in this Farm Bill fight, and how can New Englanders, being not such a productive agricultural region, have a strong voice?
Well, the biggest challenge in this Farm Bill cycle is deficit reduction. We'll definitely have fewer resources available to us this time around than in the 2008 Farm Bill, where we really had a lot of gains in both conservation and beginning farmers and in a lot of other areas. This time around, we're looking at spending cuts as opposed to trying to figure out how to divide new available resources. And so even though we are in New England and in the Northeast better represented on the House and Senate Agriculture Committees than ever, we've got 8 House members and 4 Senate members, it's going to be harder than ever to sort of shift that paradigm that we've seen for the last 30, 50 years, where so many of the Farm Bill resources, particularly in the commodity title, end up going to the Midwest, which also produces most of those commodities. But I think that we're going to have to be engaged, and we're going to have to fight for a fair share of the resources, particularly around beginning farmers and rebuilding local and regional food systems, which is I think in New England we're really at the cutting edge on local and regional food systems and rebuilding those systems and structures and markets, and we need federal resources to help us make those investments. But we're going to have to really fight hard for those things because the resources are pretty limited this time around.
So the resources are limited, and just to kind of create a contrast, the money that's being spent currently subsidizing the production of commodity crops, many of which are centered in the Midwest, for export. I am reading the newspaper called Ag Capital Press, and in it, there's a lot of talk about free trade agreement in South Korea, and they're talking about, well, if for every $1 billion of food product that we export, that's making, for every $1 billion, that's making 10,000 jobs. And I was like, wow, that sounds like a lot of jobs. You know, then I thought about how much it takes to make $1 billion worth of corn. And I was wondering if you could reflect on the economic value of investing rather in a local food economy and the supply chain and the rural development that comes from that kind of investment versus the kind of investment that we've been seeing for the last 30 years that's, you know, given us, such an abundance of corn in our diets and in our export menu.
That's a really good question. I wish I had more data, but I think that my instinct is to answer this question from my own personal experience of having lived in the Midwest, where, all of those commodity dollars may come into a community, but they don't necessarily benefit the whole community. Those programs have led to land consolidation. They've led to rural depopulation. They've led to communities rural places that may be highly productive in terms of agriculture, but are actually food deserts. So I don't know where those jobs are that they're creating, but I do know what impact they've literally had on rural communities in the Midwest. So that's one aspect. The other thing is we know that building local and regional food systems that are made up of small and moderate-sized firms are tremendous job creators. There are a number of good studies coming out of Michigan that suggest that, I don't have the exact numbers, but we do know that those kinds of food systems do create jobs. They also create a healthier community because ownership is more widespread. It's dispersed. It's people have more economic opportunity. The diet is healthier because there's greater access to fresh and local food. So I think that we can compete on the job creation issue, but we can really compete in terms of what's best for communities and how food systems affect communities and plus and minus.
Well, then this is a thing, you know, we have this tremendous influx of young minds and ambitious people into agriculture, and I don't think that is for no reason. As a foundational industry, as a foundational practice, it seems that is the right place to start when it comes to, you know, rebuilding the local economy and setting in motion a whole series of entrepreneurial moments as we, you know, reclaim the supply chain, essentially. Cold storage, you know, breweries, roasting houses. I just met some wonderful people in Massachusetts who run a malt house, and they malt barley. And then smoke houses. Obviously, apple juice and pickles are two new ones. I've just been making friends with some pickle makers. And, it just starts to be so much fun to have so many more relationships in the food chain and you know, obviously, jobs and everything like that. But more than that, it's the culture comes back. And it's, you know, way much more fun for having a party.
Right.
So
it's really exciting, yeah.
It's exciting. And I think it's important, and we're having these policy podcasts, and also as we are contemplating our own actions, to think in terms of that kind of holistic view of where we're pointed and where we need our policy to point us.
it's really exciting, and I think New England is leading the way in terms of beginning farmers and this sort of creative entrepreneurial spirit. And it's transforming rural communities, but it's also transforming urban communities. We have a member of New England Farmers Union who is a beginning farmer who's farming in downtown Providence, Rhode Island, and she came to our annual meeting and just spoke about how it's affected her community, her family, her neighborhood in ways that bring a bright spot to an otherwise fairly blighted economically in every other way situation. So it is exciting. It's transformational.
It's transformational. Yes, I love Tess very much, and I'm trying to have an adventure with her in the next few days. That is, for anyone who's interested, Little City Growers Cooperative in Providence, Rhode Island. It's a cooperative of urban farmers who market together and support each other and are just kick-ass in almost every way. Annette, how can people tune in to New England Farmers Union and read your policy platform and join your membership base? What should they do first?
Please come to our website. It's newenglandfarmersunion.org. And on the front page, there are two links. One is to our Farm Bill platform, which is a work in progress, where it's a work of our policy committee. You can also see there a link for our policy book, which is a more comprehensive statement of federal policy to get a sense of who we are and what we care about and what's important to us. You can also sign up for our e-news, and you can also join NIFU, and I would encourage you to do that. We are 1,500 members strong and growing, and it's important when we go and interact with and try to educate members of our delegation and others in Washington, D.C., to tell them that, we are 15, 16, 17, 2,000 members strong, and this is who we are. I just would urge you to join NIFU, stay involved. You have a voice. There's a form right on the website where you can suggest amendments to our policy book that then they will be considered by our policy committee. We have an annual meeting once a year. We're at most of the farm shows, so keep an eye out for us and come up and say hello.
So democracy needs you and NIFU needs you. I really like your name, NIFU. That's the New England Farmers Union. This has been another policy podcast for the upcoming 2012 Farm Bill season. If you eat well, if you live in the Valley, or if you're interested in being a part of the change, well, what better way than to engage with the very practical, farmer-forward, and quite historical farm organization? When was the National Farmers Union founded?
110 years ago, and there are nationwide about 150,000 members. So we are, one of the largest general ag organizations in the U.S.
And the three principles are cooperation, legislation, and?
Education.
Okay. So nothing better than that, and thank you so much, Annette. And
Thanks so much for having me, Severin. I enjoyed it.
All the best to you all, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.